Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 26th of September. Very nice to have you with us. We have a great panel. I'll admit we're a little late. I've just been fascinated watching Megyn Kelly on the Megyn Kelly Today Show. We're just sitting in here watching it. It is wow. It's really
striking.
Something. It's very striking. That's the word. Wow. If you. If you haven't seen enough carnage, go turn on that. Well, good morning. Welcome. I'm glad you're listening to us and not watching that. And it's very nice to have you here. We've got some breaking news. The Equifax CEO stepping down after the hack that exposed 143 million people. Probably not a huge shock. And yet, there we go. We're going to be talking about that and many other stories this morning. Let me introduce our panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, you know.
Oh, that's your, right? Yeah. You're all right?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Excellent. Well, our good friend Mike Spain is with us. He's here every Tuesday, and we are very happy to welcome him back, the associate editor of the Times Union. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
And J.P. Miller, who is the man responsible for Empire Report, which, by the way, has a great Megyn Kelly story on there today. It's one of their headlines. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you with us. All right. So let's go with the news that is happening. And the big news, of course, is healthcare. Let's talk about healthcare. The health bill, the latest round, is this 3.3? What is this? Something like that, 3.3. The health bill appears dead as Senator Susan Collins of Maine has declared her opposition. She said over the weekend that it was hard for her to imagine that she would vote yes. And yesterday she wrote in a statement saying that there was no way she was going to vote yes for this. The announcement by Susan Collins of Maine effectively dooms what has been a long-shot effort by Republicans in the Senate to make one more attempt at repealing the health law after failing in dramatic fashion in July. The question now, it seems to be, is what they're going to do. Are they going to bring it to a vote? Are they not going to bring it to a vote? Are they just going to kind of slink off and say, okay, we tried? Or are they going to keep going over the next couple of days until the Friday deadline and say, let's give this a shot? Alan, what do you think of this?
Well, it's clear that they're not able to come to grips with the fact that they've lost on this. That's because, like a two-year-old in a tantrum, they just can't get it. They can't move away from the fact that they need that money in order to do their tax cut. We've been saying this on this program again and again all along, but I'm seriously in love with Ms. Collins, Senator Collins. I can tell you that right now. She's a woman who is a profile in courage. She's doing what's right. And there's nothing better than a person who does what's right when they're in politics. You don't see it all the time. So my heart goes out to her. I think it's a tough thing for her to do, but she has real confidence, and I think she's terrific. And I'm thinking that we're going to get to a point now where they're going to keep coming back because they can't not keep coming back. We know that the Republican contributions, the big money, is not there the way that it was supposed to be. They want to win their seats back. And unlike Collins, these people are just adamant about getting the money, and they'll do whatever they have to do, so they'll keep on coming back.
So now, my understanding, though, the reason they were fighting this deadline is they would have to get 50 votes
right,
as opposed to 60 votes. So if they keep coming back, if they can't get 50, how the hell are they going to get 60 unless you really do have something that's bipartisan?
Joe, that's a good idea, a good point. But they're also going to not change the rule. They're going to change every rule they can. We've seen them do that before. Now there's talk that they won't pass a budget unless they get their way. Well, they'll look even more like fools then. It isn't that these are the established rules and we can all count on the fact that it's going to go this way. It isn't. They will keep on tweaking the rules, doing what they have to do in order to have their way. And for example, we hear now they're trying to mess up the Obamacare program, the Affordable Health Care Act, by not keeping their federal offices open on weekends.
Right.
You know, this is the kind of thing that we can expect from these folks. It's pathetic. But the man is the president of the United States, at least for a while, we're going to all have to deal with it.
It is. It's amazing to me when you think just numbers, and I know we don't put a whole lot of, many of us don't put a whole lot of stock into these numbers, but let's say President Trump's latest number is 39-40%, somewhere in there, but Mitch McConnell has a 19% approval rating. Paul Ryan has, what, a 31% approval rating? I mean, they have to be looking and saying, okay, so this guy is more popular than we are, and look what we're doing. I mean, at some point, you have to realize that your political future is seriously in jeopardy because you're not doing anything right.
Right. Last week, we were on the program. We were talking about health care, and yep. I said there is zero chance that the GOP passes a health bill. I think in that week that chance has not increased past 0%. They still have a 0% chance. And you're exactly right, Joe, that these Republicans believe that the Trump presidency is a temporary thing. They are in panic mode over the cultural divisions that President Trump is sowing within our country. And they are not going to be able to not only pass any health care reform, they're not going to be able to pass tax reform, they're not going to be able to pass immigration reform. And that is why they have a worse approval rating than the most unpopular president we've experienced in a long time, President Trump.
It is. It's fascinating to watch. Mike Spain.
Yeah, I was going to say Mitch McConnell just was reelected, so he's got five more years in his term, and he doesn't have to worry about that so much. What is really at stake is whether he holds the vote this week or whether he listens to his members and they just cancel the vote because they don't want to be forced to go on the record. And Alan, what do you think? Do you think he's going to hold a vote even though he can't get this bill through, or is he going to back off?
I don't know. Mike, my feeling is I don't care what they do. I mean,
as long as they don't pass the bill, right?
Well, the word is out. They're done. This thing is not working. I think we could get hung up on whether they have a formal vote or not. I think the main thing to remember is that once again, because of the courageous John McCain and God knows how long he'll be around, and Susan Collins, and perhaps Murkowski, although we don't really know what she was going to do, right?
Right. Let's her off the hook if they don't hold the vote. Right,
yeah. Right. So, but the main thing that these people care about is their continued incumbency in office. So we have an election coming up, which is really going to be very telling as to whether the radical right, the Sarah Palin group in a United States Senate election, whether the Sarah Palin group wins, or whether Trump, who is now in the swamp, he's now part of the defense to keep Strange where he is. So I don't know whether or not it matters. I don't think it does.
So let me ask this question, because I find this fascinating as well, is that when we're talking about putting it to a vote, so from what I understand, the rationale, even if you know it's going to fail, or you're pretty sure it's going to fail, that the reason you put it to a vote if you're Mitch McConnell is to get those senators on the record to say, to make that point that Mike Pence has been making, that a vote against this bill is a vote to keep Obamacare. And this obviously then would put pressure on the senators to perhaps change their vote, which doesn't seem to be working, but also to put them on the record against this bill. But isn't the opposite true, that it also puts these senators on the record for approving and supporting a very, very bad bill that seems to only have 19% approval in the public? It seems like that plan could very much backfire on
them. So let's parse this for a moment. There are people like Rand Paul, right?
Yes.
Does he do better if there's a vote or not?
I think he does great without a vote, because he's already come out opposed to it. He came out from the very beginning, and he stays with his principles, right?
And if there is a vote, he does great also. I mean, he could go back to his constituency and say, see, I was as good as I was. Look, let's remember one thing about Mitch McConnell, and that is that that guy is responsible to the conference. He is responsible for keeping individual senators in office. That's why the more strange Senate race is so important, because if this is this the right word? Lunatic.
Yes. That works.
Right winger wins. That brings out all the other lunatics who put these Republican incumbents in a bad place. That's why that race is much more important as to whether or not all these people who are think they're doing the right smart thing, political thing, get some cover either by having the vote or not having the vote. I don't think it matters.
You can have debates, obviously, on certain bills and certain things that these Republican senators have said. But when you have John McCain, Rand Paul, Susan Collins coming out so forcefully against this, maybe less so with Susan Collins, but still forcefully, I mean, that says something, too. You would think that would have an effect on her Senate colleagues, wouldn't you, JP? I mean, at some point that they even look at it and say, oh, okay.
Yes, I think that you're
especially
exactly
McCain.
Right. If they make these senators vote, they're not going to vote for this hugely unpopular bill. They're all focused on re-election, and they're not going to stick their necks out for Trump on something that they know is not going to pass, A, and B, these senators are liking Trump less and less every week and month that go by. They think he is bad for the party. They think he's bad for the country.
Join the club.
They think he's bad for their re-election chances.
Right. Worst of all for them. And they continue to put these bills up in front of the American people like they're going to pass something and then fail. It is not good strategy if I was in Mitch McConnell's shoes to keep bringing up these bills that are going to fail.
Yeah, McConnell, I don't think he risks re-election because that's not till 5 years from now. What he risks is his ability to wrangle his caucus and perhaps even his leadership as the Senate Majority Leader. There may be a coup if he's consistently unable to get anything out of this group.
Now, we've heard... I'm sorry, Alan. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what we don't want to miss here is that his job is not to get that bill passed. His job is to protect his people so that they can get reelected. And that is his primary mission. I think we can't say it enough, because to misunderstand that, I don't think he really gives a darn about the health care bill. I think he's worried that he's caught between the crosshairs of the president of the United States, who threatens each of his people, and because that is what this is all about.
But you keep on saying, if you're Mitch McConnell, you keep on saying, well, look, you know, we'll bring this to repeal and replace. We have to do this. But again, the majority of the American people say they don't want that. And even in, are you protecting your own people when you keep on bringing a bill before the Senate that nobody really seems to want to attach their name to? I mean, it just at some point you wonder that the strategy seems to be. I mean, we've said a lot of things about Mitch McConnell, but we've always said that he's a master strategist.
He's a shrewd politician.
Very shrewd politician. So what is his end game here? Are we missing something, I guess, is my question.
Maybe he's doing this to keep Trump off his back, to show the president that, hey, we're trying our best. Don't come attack me, because when he gets attacked on Twitter by the president, I don't think that for Mitch McConnell that's a good day in the office. I think that a lot of his constituency, including a lot of the donors to the National Republican Senatorial Committee, a lot of the donors to his campaign, are saying to him, Leader McConnell, we gave you a lot of donations. We've got Trump in office. We've got a Republican Senate. We've got a Republican House. Why can you not pass a single piece of legislation? This is embarrassment not only to you and the president, but to the party. And so he's maybe showing that he's trying to make his best effort.
Precisely.
Well, it does, if this goes down as it's expected to do this week, or it doesn't have a vote, actually, it opens the door to another option. And I mean, it's what you referenced, Joe, and that is They could just ignore Trump, reach across the aisle, and come up with enough votes to come up with some kind of a interim health care plan that would protect people and save them politically.
Some Republican senators have suggested starting over with parliamentary language and a new budget blueprint that once again would shield repeal legislation from a filibuster, but that could terribly complicate Republican efforts to overhaul the tax code, a risk the leadership may not want to take. The chances of that happening?
Well, I mean, you're talking about extending this 50-vote only,
yes.
Or 51 votes.
This is what Alan
only.
Was talking about
yeah,
earlier.
And if they do that, it has other implications. But you got to also think about a couple of things. And one, I don't mean to be grim, but if John McCain should
yeah.
pass away, and then you have Senator Menendez on corruption trial, a Democratic senator from New Jersey who's now on trial for corruption charges, if he is convicted, he will be removed from office, and that will give Chris Christie the chance to appoint maybe himself as the next senator, and that would give the Republicans, and if the governor of Arizona appoints the successor to John McCain, and I'm sorry for making that reference, but it's a possibility now, and it is going to give them a lot more votes.
Yeah, you know, Mike, that is a very important point about New Jersey, and one I haven't been thinking about enough. It may actually swing the jury, because there'll be enough people who recognize how important this is going to be. Now, in the Arizona case, one of the reasons McCain has been doing what he's doing is his governor does not want Obamacare repealed. So I would assume that when that governor gets his chance to put something on the table, it's not going to be somebody who is with the president and the party on this. It's going to be somebody who will do what McCain is doing.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think that's a correct reading. I mean, he is not a Trump, a deep Trump supporter, the governor of Arizona. So we'll see.
And in New Jersey, the time to go. Or,
no, you can get 10 seconds worth of stuff out.
New Jersey is extremely interesting because Chris Christie has been spurned by the White House. He thought that he was going to get a job at the White House.
Yeah.
Chris Christie is a big guy for revenge. He appointed a non-serious U.S. senator before, when there was a vacancy before, which allowed Cory Booker to become U.S. senator. I could see Chris Christie getting some nice, sweet revenge on President Trump.
What did Steve Bannon say in 60 Minutes, calling it Chris Christie didn't fare well in Billy Bush weekend? All right. So we'll see more about that. We'll talk about all of that and much more coming up. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let me take a quick moment to mention our lockbox and the fact that it is open and the fact that we need your help because we would like to have the fund drive over before it officially begins. It officially begins October 16th, but we want to fill the lockbox. The more we put into it now is the less we have to collect later, and we can keep you in with regular programming. So there's a lot at stake. The fund drive begins October 16th. So whatever you can do now, Alan, very important. Yes?
Well, it could not be more important because nothing we're talking about, nothing we're doing can happen if we don't have a radio station. And we've all made it together. It's that simple. Now, the good news is I'm told by our wonderful Colleen O'Connell, Joe, that we're slightly ahead in the lockbox of where we were before, but we can't rest on our laurels, and we have a long way to go. And I just keep thinking, if everybody would just do one little thing, whether it's $5 or $1,000, it would be great. Sure, there are still some tickets for Cap Rep left.
Cap
but
Steps.
That's, yep. Cap Steps, of course.
Yep. That's all right. That's another thing we're going to be talking about today. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's exactly right. There is no station. There's no discussion. There's no panel without everybody getting on board. Going and just simply dialing a number or going to WAMC.org and putting a few pennies in, whatever you can do, and we're whole. We could do it this morning. I tell you that right now.
Absolutely. We do have the Cap Steps tickets. It is for a performance on November 3rd, and we ask for a pledge of $150 for a pair of tickets. We are almost three-quarters of the way through those tickets. All of these shows have sold out. This is the fourth time we've been doing it. Those shows sell out, so my expectation would be that in the next day or two, those will sell out again. So if you want those, now is the time. As Alan always says, you know, don't come bellyaching to him later.
As Alan always says, don't be calling me and saying I'm a terrible person because I couldn't get him a seat that didn't exist. But I like the language. Don't be calling me.
Yes. Friday, November 3rd, 7:30, and you get a CD recording. And again, $150, and you get a pair. And but as Alan says, it's whatever you can do. That's the important part. And do what you can. So 1-800-323-9262. Also, just press 0 and someone will help you. Also, you can go to WAMC.org and there is a button there that says donate now. All right. We will talk about that much more, but let's go back to what is happening. We have a letter or two. I'll read those and then we'll go on to other subjects. Christine says, despite Susan Collins and her emphatic no on the Grand Cassidy vote, if it comes up, we still need to make phone calls to senators who are on the fence because I don't trust any of them anyone who saw the horrible events yesterday at the hearings with disabled people being pulled out of the chamber, shame on Republicans. She is referring to the hearing. Of course, John McCain had said that he was very concerned because this wasn't going through the proper process because there were no hearings. So they decided to have a hearing. Orrin Hatch held a hearing and protesters came in and interrupted the first 20, 30 minutes of it. They were dragged out. And, yeah, it wasn't a good visual, let's put it that way.
You don't find anybody showing up to support this proposed GOP takedown of the Affordable Care Act. I mean, it doesn't seem to have a lot of enthusiasm or emotion connected to the effort to do it.
Ramon writes, some of you are more savvy about how the media works. In this case, broadcast is the question. Does anyone have any comment as to why the election results in Germany are getting no airtime? The Angela Merkel party is at its lowest seats since the 50s, and her leadership seems to have been ushered in the anti-Euro Union, anti-globalist party. Why is the silence so deafening, or am I just missing it? We talked about it at length yesterday. I know it has been talked about at length on NPR. I think if you're talking about it not being mentioned at greater length on cable news networks and broadcast, I think obviously you have a point, right? But
I don't know. I don't know. I saw it all over the cable news networks. So, you know, you got to listen. Or is who was the great comedian who said? Forget who it was. I remember who it was.
Now. Okay, never mind.
First, you have to buy a ticket.
Yes. Well, and then the other thing, too, is that we keep on hearing the story about and many people, and I think rightfully so, is how, and we have as one of our topics today, about how the devastation in Puerto Rico and the of Hurricane Marie coming in and devastating Puerto Rico. And that is a crisis beyond anything we have seen in many, many decades. And yet we are talking about football players taking a knee. So, but a lot of this comes from the president's Twitter account.
The German election is a difficult one to just do, and people are doing it as a soundbite. I mean, it really does require a thoughtful discussion, and that's the benefit of public radio or the op-ed pages or the long sections in the New York Times and Washington Post. It's very difficult to do just as a soundbite. Angela Merkel held on to her seat, but some awfully nasty right-wing white supremacist type people actually got elected, and that's worrisome, period.
There, yeah. You've done it in a few seconds.
Right.
You are a champ. Okay. Peter writes, do you think that the Republicans' not-so-long-term plan is to wait for John McCain to die and then hope that his successor will vote for a health care bill? Well, we alluded to that earlier, that is a possibility. Russell says, isn't it a shame that Trump, McConnell, et cetera, don't have the integrity to simply say, I was wrong? Well, I don't think that's going to happen.
That hasn't happened, I believe.
No.
Dan says, and some still wonder why only half the electorate votes. Healthcare is way too expensive for the average American. Without single payer, the voter will always lose. Bob says, Mike is wrong. Even after a conviction, it would take a two-thirds vote of the Senate to remove Menendez. Very unlikely to happen while there was a Republican governor in New Jersey.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I thought by being convicted of a criminal offense, I guess I'm getting it mixed up with New York state law.
Absolutely, that's exactly right, Mike.
We can still have criminals in Congress. Yeah. Thank goodness.
If you get convicted in New York state, you're out. You're out.
Thank you for that clarification. Correction.
They would never have a law like that in New Jersey.
No.
Well, it's actually a federal rule.
Right.
That's,
but it would be,
that's interesting.
It
yeah.
wouldn't be good for New Jersey.
Right.
Kathleen writes, I agree that the GOP will be back at it. All of this repeal replace nonsense is a trick to pare back Medicaid and use the funds for tax breaks for rich donors. Nursing home residents on state aid are cared for because Medicaid kicks in after they spend down their funds. What will happen to them without Medicaid? And Geraldine says, I don't understand why the Democrats are not insisting that before we discuss tax reform, we need to see Trump's tax returns. Okay. Don't we as Americans have a right to know how he will benefit from any kind of tax reform? No tax reform until we see the tax returns.
You can't disagree with the logic of that.
You can disagree with the logic of it, but it ain't going to happen, right?
No, I wouldn't anticipate
right.
that.
And it's not happen. The rule. The rule, you know, this guy says, if it's a law, I'll do it. If it's not a law, if it's the way it's always been done, I won't do it.
And he said he'll release him when the audit's done, guys. So,
but he's in a. But it's been pointed
perpetual
out
audit.
that a real estate developer with so many entanglements as he has, and so many developments and investments, you're under a constant state of audit. There really is no end
sure.
to the audit. The one way we might see the tax returns or portions of them is the Mueller investigation, Bob Mueller's investigation mm-hmm. into the Russian connections. He can subpoena those, and if they become evidence in any kind of a case that's made, some of them may surface. I'll bet you we'll know a little more about them if that happens.
Yeah. There was also a famous real estate developer in New York City who last month was in the process of going through a divorce, and his net income, I think, last year was negative $65 million, and he's a billionaire. And his net income was negative $65 million. So real estate individuals have extremely egregious tax returns. It also reports how much you give to charity. And I think it's well documented that President Trump is not the most charitably generous guy on the planet.
So let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about more hypocrisy as we talk about servers, email servers. We'll discuss that story and much more after this. Music of Alison Brown from an album called The Company You Keep, and great music that we have this morning. A lot of people ask about the music, so
that is beautiful music.
Pass that on to you. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us go to some other stories and talk about private email accounts. At least six White House advisors have used private email accounts. This from an article in the New York Times. The closest advisors occasionally use private email addresses to discuss White House matters, current and formal officials said on Monday. The disclosures come a day after news surfaced that Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and advisor, used a private email account to send or receive about 100 work-related emails during the administration's first 7 months. But Mr. Kushner was not alone. Stephen Bannon, the former chief White House strategist, Reince Priebus, the former chief of staff, and occasionally used private email addresses as well. Other advisors, including Gary Cohn and Stephen Miller, they are not former, they are current, sent or received at least a few emails on personal accounts. Ivanka Trump, the president's elder daughter, who is married to Mr. Kushner, used a private account when she acted as an unpaid advisor in the first 6 months of the administration, according to Newsweek. Does it matter, Alan?
Well, obviously it matters, but you don't see an awful lot of tweets coming out of the president right now in defense of all of this. I mean, he went and he excited all of those crowds in moments, you know, which one could have relevance to the 1930s, and saying over and over, put her in jail and all the rest of it. So it's got to be somewhat embarrassing. But if you think for a single second that the Trumpistas, the people who support Trump, are going to say, oh, isn't that terrible? I'm going to switch my thinking about Trump right now. Forget it. It ain't going to happen.
Well, I don't think it will happen with the Trumpistas, those 25% who are going to support him do or die. But I think that for a lot of people who did support Trump, it's just one more chipping away at his foundation and revealing that there was, false equivocation, that there was hypocrisy when he was going after Hillary for things that turn out not to be these egregious egregious acts. And it undermines the long-term credibility that he has. And when it comes right down to supporting him and some of the things he stands for, he's less effective. But it's a slow chip away.
So let's see, when the next Trump numbers come out in the polls, Mike, whether or not this makes a difference. I'm going to bet that it does not. In fact, he's up 4 or 5 points right now, perhaps because people gave him a break on the reaction to pre-Puerto Rico catastrophes in the United States. Puerto Rico will probably bring him down again, and I suspect that the reason he's very slow on Puerto Rico is because that is a Democratic island if there ever was one. So,
now, what about the NFL? Yeah. Do you think the NFL will bring him down?
You know, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. Joe, I just don't know.
You got a lot of football fans in this country and a lot of football fans who are in red states. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, that could bring him up. I mean, people are not so emboldened to go out and analyze the issues of free speech and get into the nuance of patriotism and how patriotism is in big part respecting each other's points of view, and that we live in a free country. We don't just live in a country where it's like North Korea and they all raise their arms in unison. There are a lot of different people here with a lot of different points of view, and that's what's in our Constitution, and that's what our patriotism defends. But that's too nuanced for a lot of people. They just want to, they want to see it black and white, and I don't mean that as a pun.
Well, yes, except that you're right on target. You know, when somebody takes a knee and they're black, what are we really seeing here? And the president of the United States calls them SOBs. What are we really seeing? A continuation of his racist, race-baiting ways. There's no question in my mind about it. So when I sounded equivocal a few seconds ago about what I expected to see happen here, the question is, are the people who go to football games basically racist? Do they see black football players as people who have been purchased along the lines of slavery, to tell you the truth, but who don't really have a right to their political opinions? That's what I'm worried about here. I don't know who those people sitting in those stands are going to support based on the fact that we do know that Trump has all along been race baiting.
But when you see Jerry Jones, of all people, and the entire Dallas Cowboy football team during the national anthem,
before
the national anthem,
kneeling down and lock arms
together in Texas, of all places. Well, there's something going on there too.
Yes, I'll tell you what it is. It's called profit. I think these guys.
Boy, you are cynical, Alan.
No, you're
right,
Alan.
I think these guys have done the right thing. But on the one hand, you have a president who is saying, "Don't go to the games." What are their choices except to lock arms and have the owners come out and take a knee?
Well, I think it's more nuanced than that, though. I mean, I think there were a lot of different expressions over the weekend. Some players stood, some players kneeled, some players were on the field, some players were off the field. There were different ways of expressing it, but there did seem to be an overall unity within the league, which, yes, I agree, is completely has to do with the profit margin. However, it does seem to be that there's also something here of these young men who are playing this game are trying to make a point as well.
There were a lot of different expressions. One of the expressions was a New York Giant got on all fours and pretend like he was a dog peeing in the end zone. So there were a lot of different expressions against Trump on this. And, you know, Trump as president should be a unifier.
Do they have pictures of that?
They've got pictures.
Okay. Yes. I missed that one.
Trump should obviously be unifying the country, not dividing the country. Him doing this in Alabama was egregious, especially with his outrage at the NFL players and lack of outrage at the Nazis.
We're marching in Charlottesville. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so... Lack of
outrage over brain injury regarding the game of football.
That's also inherent to a lack of science and recognizing science. And he's buying into that sort of rhetoric that, you know, you're making $11 million a year. You're doing it under your own risk. You might hurt your brain, but it's done openly in a free country, and it's okay if you hurt your brain. And it's you're also encouraging children all over the United States to play a game that's not going to make them $11 million, but might hurt their brain.
Right. And the Wall Street Journal had a really great column entitled "The Politicization of Everything," and football is something that is so loved in our country. Everybody, I think, can remember watching with their mothers and brothers and sisters, and it's a time where on Sunday everybody gets together and watches a football game. And unfortunately for our country, this guy Colin Kaepernick and this guy Donald Trump have turned even our national game of football into something where we are divided on and choosing whether or not to watch. I think it's ridiculous.
All right, let's go back to the another issue here, and that is the travel ban, the latest travel ban that has come out, which affects tens of thousands. And let's just bring you up to date here, because it blocks tens of thousands of visas each year, could block it, to people who want to immigrate to the United States. So on Monday, the Supreme Court put off, at least for now, a hearing on Trump's previous travel ban, asking instead for briefs on whether the latest restrictions mean there is nothing left for the justices to decide. Opponents of the ban, meanwhile, vowed to fight on, asserting that the new measure inflicted some of the same harms of the first and that it was driven by the same discriminatory intent. For us, this was a Muslim ban. It remains a Muslim ban, according to the executive director of the San Francisco chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations. The newest ban is in some ways even more expansive than the last, remaining in effect indefinitely and imposing restrictions on 8 rather than 6 countries. But unlike the last ban, the restrictions vary from place to place, and countries that increase their cooperation and information sharing with the United States might be able to find their way off of that list.
Yeah, the Washington Post, a review of State Department data, found that more than 65,000 visas were issued in fiscal 2016, but they would not likely be issued under this new ban. So it's going to affect a lot of people trying to come to the U.S.
Alan?
Well, look, if I'm sitting in the Supreme Court chamber and I have to take a vote on this, I'm going to vote to lay it aside, lay the existing case aside until I have an opportunity to factor all of this in. The conservatives are going to say, okay, this makes a big change, and therefore he can do what he wants. And the liberals on the court are going to say, nothing doing. This is a bad thing. So I understand why they laid it aside. I think it's a reasonable thing for them to have done, because everything has now changed and they have to go back and look at the whole thing. But clearly, we know what's up. What's up is it's a Muslim ban. The question is, can it be proven and acknowledged by the justices?
So now does it go back to the lower courts at this point?
I don't know if it goes to the lower courts, but it shows that the first and second Muslim ban were both hastily cobbled together in the early parts of the administration. I think the Trump administration has a very serious focus on this. I think they've had a lot of lawyers try to cobble something together that is going to get passed by the Supreme Court, allowed
basically
by the Supreme
allowed.
Court.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
And obviously. This is something that was core to Trump's message when he got elected, and he takes this very seriously. And you see every terrorist attack around the world, as soon as it happens, Trump gets on his Twitter within 3 minutes and blames people from outside of the country, and that hopefully it won't happen to the United States.
Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller making up the panel this morning. We're going to take a news break. When we come back, we have other topics to talk about, like Equifax, Puerto Rico, North Korea, and much more. We have lots of your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller. I'm Joe Donahue. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we welcome you. We have letters. Let's go to those, and then we'll move on to some other topics in the news this morning. Robert says Trump is absolutely correct that anyone who blatantly disrespects the core values of our country is an SOB who should be fired immediately. Therefore, he can bring the country together by firing himself now. David says, God bless John McCain for their human decency. The most poorly insured are also those who work jobs that result in the most long-term injury, physical suffering, sickness, and emotional troubles. Dave says, did any charity report receiving $1 million of Trump's own money that he promised after Hurricane Harvey? David Fahrenholt of the Washington Post has been on that beat, and so far I believe the answer is no, correct? Am I right on that?
I haven't heard it been reported, but maybe with pressure he would give some of that foundation money over.
As promised.
It would take a lot of pressure.
He did use it to commission a $26,000 portrait of himself.
Alyssa says it is urgent that the Jones Act be waived and ultimately repealed to better help our fellow citizens in Puerto Rico. The White House stated yesterday it is not planning to do this. We must call our reps and tell them to support the one-year waiver. There is an op-ed in yesterday's New York Times for more information and activity on Twitter as well. We're going to be talking about Puerto Rico in just a second. Bruce says, for Trump supporters, patriotism is nationalism. Leslie says, coming from Elizaville in Columbia County Recycling Center, my husband overheard two locals saying they were sorry to have voted for Trump, did not like the name-calling SOBs, so there is that. But how many are out there? We don't know. John says, let's keep our eyes on the prize, people. Trump is playing everybody. What's happening with Mueller? Who will the Democrats run in the next election that will beat him? We don't know that, do we, Alan?
No. No, we really don't. Every time I pick up a paper, there's a hint from somebody. Joe Biden, for example, is opening up. Now, there'll be people who say, oh, no, he's too old. And
he'll be 80, won't he, in 2020?
Yeah, yeah. But the fact is that he's always wanted to be president. I love the guy, frankly. 80 seems to me to be less and less of a problem than it used to be.
What do you base that on, Alan?
I don't know. It came from somewhere in outer space.
Is 80 the new 77?
Yeah, right. However, I do think we have to understand that there's going to be a primary process, that people don't know right now will put themselves forward. So, for example, one of my favorites is a guy I've interviewed for years, we've interviewed for years on WAMC, Senator Chris Murphy. We interviewed him when he was a congressman. He's all kinds of guts. He's a very bright guy from Connecticut. I would be really happy to see him get the nomination. I love Deval Patrick, our governor in Massachusetts. I think that he is a guy who, much like Obama, could get a lot of both black and white votes, which frankly is one of the reasons that Obama won. So we're going to have to see who puts themselves forward and who catches fire. It's really that simple.
Do you think, and now I know I sort of know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Given what we are seeing in the congressional races, let's look at those running against Elise Stefanik. Let's look at those who have already lined up to run against John Faso. There are a lot of people. So we can only assume, Alan, that you're absolutely right, that we're going to have a gang of like 20 people running for president, much like the Republicans had in 2 years ago, a year ago in 2016. And so where does that – is that good for the process, or should we, as we did with George Bush – George W. Bush in 2000 have almost of a party coronation for one person that you can get behind, that you don't kill each other in the primaries then?
Well, you're not going to have a coronation. It won't happen that way. The process is open.
It is a democracy.
People will put themselves forward. It didn't stop Donald Trump from being president of the United States, as we see. The real question is, who's in that group? Is there somebody who stands out, who people will say, you know, this is really great, a really great woman or man who we could really support? And right now, there is no front runner. I think it's fair to say that there is no front runner.
Alan, I'll disagree. I think the front runner is Bernie Sanders. I've seen him on Meet the Press. He is really where the heart and soul of the Democratic Party is.
That's okay.
And I also think there is a little bit of a dark horse. I saw George Clooney criticize Hillary the other day in the newspaper, and if the Democrats want to win, I think that running a celebrity against a celebrity could be a very effective tool, and I think Clooney could potentially beat Trump better than these other elected officials.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be a nonconformist kind of candidate that emerges as one of the players, at least. And Clooney's a good example. You might even get somebody like Al Franken, who made the transition over to politics, but also is extraordinarily sharp and glib and has the capacity to be serious and also use humor in a very effective way.
He's good.
Yeah,
he's really good. he has made it clear that he doesn't want to do it, but I don't know. It seems like he could. It could be a quick switch to go.
Right, a transition. I mean, Bernie Sanders. Sort of broke the barrier. I think it was always difficult for someone who was Jewish to become a national candidate, and you had Joe Lieberman on a national ticket, you had Bernie Sanders, so I think it's not even going to be an issue with Al Franken, but it could be even somebody we're not mentioning, like George Clooney is a good idea. I mean, 20 years ago, somebody would have said Robert Redford, you know. But he's going
to
be 80.
I'm about to say two things. One is irrelevant. It's about the music that you've been playing this morning. There is no greater instrument in the world than the five-string banjo. And then the second thing is, it ain't going to be Clooney.
Yeah, I mean, why would you give that up? I mean, he's got his life.
To be the most powerful man on the
planet. No, he would give it up.
He is the most powerful man on the
planet. He can't win.
He's married to a woman who isn't from the United States. Don't you think that would hold him back? And besides, those eyebrows, they'll be a liability, I'm sure.
I like Clooney. I think that if the Democratic Party puts up another governor or senator, I think they're going to have a tough time handling Trump's chaos. And I like Al Franken, too. I think Al Franken is someone who would fit that mold of a celebrity who can spar with Trump and be outside the box and be glib.
You could argue that he is too progressive to win, but that would go back to your front runner of being Bernie Sanders, and he certainly would pick up a lot of those.
Yeah, now, Joe, you've interviewed Al Franken more recently, even when his new book came out. But so you posed that question to him. He says he's not interested.
Well, yeah, but don't they all say that, Alan?
You have to say that. You have to say it. You know, it's like somebody says, will you go to the dance with him if he asks you?
Right.
Nobody says yes. First, you got to get asked. that's when you make up your mind.
A couple of weeks ago, maybe even a couple, I don't know how many weeks ago it was now, that he put out a series of videos on climate change and a bunch of issues and going directly to a, on a, I think, Crackle on a platform. And those videos went viral. And I thought to myself, okay, you seem like you're... You seem like you're trying to go into to make yourself a little more put yourself out there, and I find that interesting. And by the way, very entertaining, but also very important stuff that he's talking about. So we'll see. Let's go on to Puerto Rico, and in our final 10 minutes here, the situation is horrible. The country is devastated. But the coverage has been very spotty. That situation dire. Some 3.4 million American citizens are without power, food and water running low. Much of the local infrastructure is destroyed or damaged. A major dam is on the brink of failure. The governor is pleading for federal help. And yet, the story, the disastrous aftermath of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, has received relatively limited on-the-ground coverage and scant discussion on national news programs. On Monday, the cable news networks, which both reflect and set the national news agenda, found many other things to discuss. The NFL, Jared Kushner's use of a private email account, the sentencing of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, nuclear tensions with North Korea, and the Senate debate over health care legislation. CNN staged a primetime debate over the topic on Monday. The five top-rated broadcast and cable network Sunday news discussion programs devoted less than 1 minute to Puerto Rico, according to a count by Media Matters, the liberal watchdog group. Even that may have overstated the non-coverage. Three of the five shows this week on ABC, Face the Nation on CBS, and Fox News Sunday did not mention Puerto Rico at all. Live reports from the battered island did pop up, albeit sporadically. Puerto Rico's governor warned of a humanitarian crisis in an interview on CNN's morning program. All three cable news networks offered occasional live reports. Among others, NBC News dispatched lead anchorman Lester Holt to San Juan. Fox News has sent correspondent at large Geraldo Rivera. Yes, we all wait.
Geraldo Rivera is still here?
He's still working.
Don't
he's
you watch still, Fox News, Alan?
He's still there. He's
amazing.
Still there. So the question is, well, it's twofold. Why, given the coverage that obviously that Harvey got, but also that Irma got and coming slamming into Florida, if you go just how many miles down on U.S. soil, why are we not paying attention? And why are we not looking at the situation and saying, oh, my God, what can we do? And why is it not permeating the coverage?
Well, I've been in Puerto Rico many times during my life. I love the island. I really do. And I feel just awful, you know, about this. But I said something. It would be seen as cynical. But Puerto Rico is a democratic island. And, you know, if were any other president, there would see a potential for making some inroads, some sense of humanitarianism and the rest of it. But I think this guy just sees it in black and white. It isn't what he wants. He's not going to help. And now, of course, he's protesting that he's doing more than people have given him so-called credit, you know, for. But it's disgusting. There really ought to be a suspension of all of these rules that people are asking for. Anything we can do to get help for this island really should be happening right now. And, you know, it really just crosses the T and dots the I about what a terrible man this guy is.
It has been an issue, too, of the story coming out slowly and dribbling out and how bad things are, especially away from the main cities where people are living in rural areas where there's no electricity. They've used up all their food and their water. It's 96 degrees. The heat index is 106. We know what devastation that had in Florida at the nursing home, et cetera.
Sure.
And now as the details are coming out, they're so incredibly grim. You know, it should be noted that the president did sign a disaster declaration, which enables, federal funds to be released. Congress needs to act. But this waiver that one of your listeners wrote in about has to do with giving up a 25, you know, requiring Puerto Rico to pay 25% of any aid that it gets. And absolutely, they're in no condition. They're already bankrupt. I mean, they're in no condition to come up with any of these funds. And, you know, New York's governor has been down there already. New York has a special connection to Puerto Rico.
Yes, indeed.
It's got a long history of Puerto Ricans who are American citizens living in the New York area and the Northeast. And some people have criticized Andrew Cuomo for that, but I can't find any reason to criticize him for underscoring the commitment that New York has to him and has to Puerto Rico. And it's actually a sign of leadership that the president probably doesn't, you know, unfortunately, he'll feel one-upped and probably will try to ignore this whole thing rather than try to one-up and go on one-on-one with Andrew Cuomo.
Well, I think Trump has pledged to visit. He has pledged to help. But yes, Cuomo has done a great job in traveling down there. He had a media event on Sunday with Jennifer Lopez, a.k.a. J-Lo, who joined with Cuomo to announce dough for Puerto Rico. And it's... Cuomo has done a great job with this.
Did you write that down?
Hey,
no,
hey, wait just a second. Jennifer Lopez, what do you think? Does she belong on a presidential ticket?
She'd be tremendous, I think. Yeah. But this is obviously a very challenging situation down in Puerto Rico, and there are people helping, and Congress needs to act, I think, and approve the approve to release the funding. And it is, I agree, Joe, a very poor reflection on the media that they are focused on NFL kneeling and they're focused on Anthony Weiner more than they're focused on the devastation in Puerto Rico, which is affecting so many of our fellow Americans.
We have about 2 minutes, and let's just let's end with the Equifax story and the fact that the CEO resigned just about an hour and a half ago. Again, not overly surprising, I guess, but what had to be done to right this ship, correct?
Oh, it's going to right the ship really quickly. This is the CEO that came in and said, we got to find more ways to get personal information and then find more ways to sell it. I mean, this is a business that's predicated on we having all our information on the databases of these companies, and then they're selling it back and forth, finding ways to get more money out of us. It's very difficult to be sympathetic for this guy, and I don't know how it rightens the ship. I mean, the whole industry has come under a big cloud and really deserves scrutiny and oversight.
If you're going to save face of your company, the first thing you got to do is get rid of the top guy, yes?
It's the beginning of a process, I suppose.
I think it was smart for him to step down. their company's in huge trouble. It's like if you're a landscaping company, a grass cutting company, and you can't cut the grass. These people, this is their job to keep this stuff
private. Secret.
Yeah. And the fact that they knew about it for weeks before they made it public, as they were doing some stock transactions.
Oops. And people are still trying to figure out what the damage. I mean, that's the other thing about the story is that people, individuals, are still trying to figure out what the damage is. You know, how they have been personally affected.
This is a lifelong impact because, as one cynical person pointed out, that your Social Security number doesn't change; it expires when you do.
And there you go. So why don't we end on that note? My thanks to everyone who wrote in. You can still do so. WAMC, panel at WAMC.org. Thanks to Alan Chartok, JP Miller, Mike Spain. Thank you very much. Good to have you all here.
Can I say hi to my friend Mike real quick? He's listening.
Oh, good. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Let's remember about the lockbox. It's so important.
Lockbox you can take care of by going to WAMC.org. You can also call this number, 800-323-9262, and just go to zero, and operators are standing by. Alan, thank you very much. We'll talk soon, and Mike and JP, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.